Where are you getting it from?
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, we were going to, when we talked about it last week at leadership meeting, they said, Dad just offered, he said, has anybody got anything? It's like, you know, the whole time during Sunday service before it was over, I kept on thinking, man, I feel like I got something to share for Father, or, you know, for next Sunday. And actually, well, actually, I was thinking about it, I better start preparing for that past Sunday, but it was just miscommunication in the spirit. My spirit was thinking one thing, and his was thinking another thing, but I told him, I said, well, there's your Father's Day present, Dad. I'll take the Sunday message. I said we should bring down like your lazy boy. We'll just set it up here. But then we didn't want to do that because we were afraid that probably, well, he'd either fall asleep or Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday this coming week, we'd get calls from Comfort Shop looking for deliveries going, somebody in the congregation ordered a lazy boy. That's the new norm seat that you guys are getting. So we didn't want to start that. So it's better than the wooden pews. But we do, we want to celebrate Dad, and you know, it's an honor. I remember when Pastor Hoblett, as he was getting ready to leave, he came, he took Beth and I out to lunch, and he said, you know, each one of us in leadership, he approached on an individual basis, and, you know, he said, he goes, I want you to help with the church, just like your dad is helping with the church, you know, I want you to work together. And he said, something I wanted, but I never got in between me and my own son. So it is kind of, it is fun to be able to work together and see what's going on. And I can tell you a lot of stories, but we'll see. Oh, I said I can. Oh. I can. There's no T in that. But
I guess they had like a mind altering.
That's, yeah. But, man, it's interesting. On Father's Day, you know, I was looking and I would stand to believe that Father's Day is probably one of the most skipped days of going to church in this country, only because there's a lack of fathers in the church. You know, it's sad. And in some ways, it could be thought as okay because you want to honor your father. Maybe they're doing something special for him, but it's so backwards. So hopefully we can change that. And that's not what I'm going to share about, but that was just something that came to my mind as I was working on this. You know, I can remember different times as we were growing up, and there's quite a few times, he's gonna signal Chris, don't record, no. There's quite a few times that I can remember times when Dad wasn't there. He was at work, you know, when we were growing up and we were playing outside, Dad was the one whistling at night, but during the week during the day, it was Mom. And we knew when we heard Mom's voice, or she had a whistle at one time, I don't know, we've had whistles and buzzers and everything else growing up, but when my mom lost her voice, we always knew that something, okay, what's she going to use this time, a metronome, a kitchen timer? She was something to get our attention. But, you know, I can remember times when Dad wasn't there. He was at work. He was doing stuff. I can remember the times the difference that it was as soon as he got the job as assistant manager here in Janesville because he was home more often. I can remember at that point then I was able to do and take her child to work day. I went to work with Dad and ran around Walmart. It's nothing I didn't do on the weekends anyways, but but I got to go in the back. So, but I can also remember a lot of times that he was there, and those are the importances that there's a lot of people growing up right now where they don't have that. But I can remember times, man, we used to, well, there's a lot of stories when Dad was there. I remember we used to sit up at going to bed at night, and he would be laying on our bed or kneeling over our bed, and we'd be talking about different things. Sometimes we'd be drawn on his back, and he'd be trying to guess what we were drawn on his back. Sometimes we were talking, after we bought the duplex, we start talking about how we're going to knock a hole in the wall, and we're going to combine everything, and it's going to be like, you know, we're going to have a mansion, man. Four bathrooms. We're going to, moving on up. No. But, you know, I can remember all those times. I can remember a lot of times when we'd be doing something with Dad, and then he'd say, don't tell your mother. And most of those times, Mom found out anyways. So we can, but he was there. Now, and one of the things that I think about, because now growing up, or, you know, having kids of my own and looking back, I've already done, oh my God, my mom told me I was going to say that, or I sound like my mother, or you, that's what my mom was dealing with. Now I know. But I can remember a lot of different times, you know. But I remember, most of all, I remember he was always engaged. some of the things that because of him being engaged that in our lives was that he was persistent. When he said what he said, he meant what he said. Whether it was joking around or being serious, he was persistent. When he started doing things, he was persistent. I can remember one of the things, Dad bought a car from an older gentleman at one time. He bought this car, and I don't know if I've never seen a jalopy, but by the time we got rid of it, it was a jalopy. You had to get in on one side because the other handle was broken off, and the back hatch had to be held open by a 2x4 because the hydraulics were shot on it. But he bought this car, and when he bought this car, he made the statement that he was, I'm not just buying a car. I made a new friend. I'm going to take care of this guy. I don't know how, he was probably, 70 years old when he bought the car, almost 80 probably by the time he bought the car. And here this old guy living all by himself. Family wasn't really around. And Dad used to go over there all the time. He'd be refilling his bird feeders. I guess now we know where he got that from. We probably vacuumed out probably 50 pounds of bird feed in the back of his car when he got it, because it was full of seeds and all that. So if only he would have known then, he probably would have saved it, but he just vacuumed it up in the shop vac and threw it out. But he'd go over there, and I remember a couple of times going over there, and we'd go over there, and he'd be, what do you need now, Mr. Miller? I'd change the sheets, do this, do that. And it's not that he couldn't get around, but it was just a lot easier for somebody else to come in there, and we used to come around. And here, Dad did it all the way to the end, till he moved to the VA home. And, King, Wisconsin. I think he even made a couple of trips up there to see him and traveling. I mean, he was persistent. He did what he had to do. And I can remember a time that kind of wore off, because at one point, this poor old guy calls the house. Hello, is Tim there? And that's how he talked. No, Mr. Miller, he's not. I'm all tangled up. I'm tangled up in the phone cord or something. He's got his walker all tangled up and couldn't get around. So I jumped on my bike and rode all the way down from where we live, all the way down by Van Gelder, down by Rockport Park and all that, and helped him out. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing? The thing is, I've been in this guy's house and know that he had machetes and everything. He probably had loaded weapons all over, because I remember helping Dad change the bed sheets, and this guy had machetes underneath the bed, and he didn't want to break in. He was a veteran. He lived through war. So, but that just came off. But that started teaching me, and when I started looking at some other things, it struck me on persistence. You know, as a parent, we have to be persistent even after they get older. Sometimes good, and sometimes. Until you get grandkids, and then it just goes out the window. And then it's like, whatever rules I had to live by don't matter now. It's unless it's me. I can't go running up and down the steps, but the kids can go jumping and all that. But persistence. So I started thinking about this persistence, and I saw a video, and we'll watch it in just a little bit here. But thinking about persistence. Persistence is the quality that allows someone to continue doing something or trying to do something, even though it is difficult or opposed by other people. Or it's the state of occurring or existing beyond the usual, expected, or normal time frame. Persistence. So I started thinking, what am I persistent for? What are you persistent for? What are you going against? What are you doing that's opposed by other people? Maybe not physically opposed, but just mentally. Going against the culture, going against the norm. What are you doing persistently? I see it now. Trying to get the kids to behave, trying to get the kids to listen, trying to get the kids to learn what's right and wrong. Jesse, bless his heart, he's going to get inundated with that. This poor guy doesn't even have kids, and he's going to be, don't worry. Eventually you get to send him home with mom or to grandpa and grandma, and then they take care of him and send him back all sugared up. So, but, working with kids, that's hard stuff, isn't it? That's hard stuff. And we try to instill in our kids, what they're supposed to do, right and wrong. And I know that they're younger, but still, it's like, I don't want you growing up thinking that's okay. But then I also see what they're doing, that they're persistent in. Anna, she's been trying to walk around for almost 2 months now, it seems like. And then on this last week, she started taking a few steps between people, or she'd let go and just stand there. She's standing in the middle of the living room, just sitting there, just like drinking a bottle or playing with a toy. You know, she's persistent. She's trying to do it. Josiah, he's persistent, trying to be independent. I'll do this. Or negotiating. How about this? How about this kind of deal, is what he says. How about this kind of deal? Or I have an idea. He's persistent in it, too. I wonder where he got that from. And Isaac trying to be just like his big brother, trying to do things on his own. You know, he's persistent about it. I remember when he was trying to, he wanted to wear underwear. Man, he wanted to wear underwear. He didn't want to wear pull-ups to bed. She told him, he said, you stay dry for a couple of weeks, we'll let you wear underwear. The poor guy's wearing underwear before his big brother. But he was persistent. He wanted to do that. I'm going to do that. You know, you can see it as they grow up. Somewhere along the line, sometimes, though, we lose that. I can remember some of the persistence from Dad, obviously, you know, working with Mr. Miller, looking at how he did his job. You know, I can remember, after working in retail for just a little bit of time that I did, I can understand why Dad sometimes had to come home and just do something else or, you know, unwind a little bit because, man, people are frustrating. But I can think about persistence that I was doing as I was a kid. Probably the most persistent I was trying to get Mom and Dad wore down to where I could go over to a friend's house. And I'm not happy to say it, but I don't know if I'm ashamed to say it, but some of that happened right here in the foyer here, going back and forth between Mom and Dad and trying to get over to the Mitchell's house. Mom said talk to you. Well, Dad said talk to you. Well, I don't. Dad didn't seem like he cared. So, but I was persistent, you know, trying to do things. I was persistent trying to make sure that I had a voice in the family, being the middle and the younger of the middle. That's a tough thing to do, you know. I remember, you try to get people, you know, when you go out with a family, you go with your family to go play at somebody else's house. I remember growing up with Beth, and we used to play all the time. Well, that's how I remember it. When we started dating, and she goes, well, I thought you were older. I don't remember ever playing with you as a kid. I remember playing with Melissa and Heather and Micah, but I don't remember you. It's like, I was invisible. You know, I remember I was persistent trying to get Micah in trouble to take the fall for the things that I did. That didn't go over too well either. I remember as I was growing up, there's just different things that came up. And, you know, you had to be persistent as a kid. Especially if you're not the most popular or you're not whatever, you got to be persistent. So how does that relate to us as Christians? Well, it's a great quality to have, and it's required. It's a required quality as a Christian to be persistent, and I'll tell you why. So 1 Peter 5:8, if we turn there, we're gonna understand why we have to be persistent, and that's because our enemy is persistent. 1 Peter 5:8 says, stay alert and watch out for your great enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Well, I've seen Animal Kingdom episodes and all that. I know those lions don't give up. They'll go out and they'll just crawl across that prairie grass and across that land and until they find that group of buffalo, and then they know, okay, all I got to do is find the weakest one. I don't care if 50 of them run off, if that one is just slow enough, I can do it. That's how our enemy is. So we got to be persistent against that. His whole goal is to interfere with what God has in place and what he has planned. He's not going against God. He's trying to just get us not to follow what God's doing. He's already lost against God. And I think he understands that. But he does know that he's got little pawns that we can move around. So he's trying to do that. We have to be persistent against it. We have to understand what's going on, how he changes his ways, and how we need to react to that. You know, I got a good glimpse of persistence watching the last couple of sports things. Beth thinks I'm nuts. She probably thinks I'm going through my midlife crisis now because I've been watching sports all the time. But it's fun to watch these guys. You know, I was watching the Stanley Cup Finals. These guys are persistent. You know, we've gone to a couple Badger hockey games, and I've never seen anybody skate so fast. Well, the referees, they all jump pretty high when the guys come at them with sticks and pucks and stuff like that. But these guys are going crazy down the ice. They're being persistent because they know even though they've got a 1 lead or a 2 lead or a 3-point lead, that other team is going to be just as persistent to get to the other end of the ice and go for it. And you see that. Look at what happened with some of the different races that we have. You know, I think of, I don't know if anybody you watch, but I watched the horse race just more so I could witness history just in case it happened. But I tell you what, you got to be persistent, not only as an owner, as a horse, as a jockey, but you got to be persistent on every level of that. The guys training them, the guys that are going out there and making sure that they're running their rounds during the week to get loosened up and all that. You got to be persistent for that. And even though you got pressure of all these people saying, well, it's not been done in so many years, you know what I got a kick out of? The jockey said, well, whatever, he looks good. I'm going to go out there and do it. I'm going to do my best. And they said, this is exactly what he has to do. He has to do this in order to get the win. And by gosh, that horse and that jockey went out there and did exactly what he had to do to get the win and even had some fuel left in the tank when it was done. He was persistent. He was going against, you know, in hockey, they're pretty mean too, but it's not Satan and that enemy coming against them, but it's their opponent coming against them, and we see it in other sports as well. They got to keep on fighting. We got to keep on fighting. You know, no matter what, it's gonna happen again. You think you got through it? You think you got done? Oh, I just got through this piece, but he's gonna fire another arrow at you, and you got to come against it and know how he's gonna be going. Now let's look at examples of persistence to see how we know why we got to do it, but what do I got to do, Lord? How do I got to be? Daniel 6:10. We did a study through Daniel on Wednesday nights, and that was pretty eye-opening to me to see somebody like Daniel, and not just Daniel, but then you got the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stories as well. But in Daniel, you've got King Nebuchadnezzar. Now this guy thinks Daniel's pretty great, actually. He's able to interpret dreams for him. He's one of his most trusted people to talk to confer with. And that gets, of course, other people ruffled, and they start freaking out a little bit. So they get if you watch the VeggieTales version, that's probably the one I'm depicting, but the gist is there. But they can conspire with themselves to make King Nebuchadnezzar sign a law into place that you can only pray to the king, to the god that the king ordains. You can't pray to your own god. What's the very first thing that Daniel does? So the ruling is just pushed down, and in verse 10 it says, but when Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home, knelt down as usual in his upstairs room. With his windows open toward Jerusalem, he prayed 3 times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God. Well, if that doesn't inspire you to be persistent and to do what you know is right, I don't know what will. You know, his first reaction wasn't to say, okay, God, where are you going to send me now so that I don't ruffle the feathers of the king? Where are you going to put me now? Lord, are you going to let them treat me like this? Are you going to let them make this rule? No, he just says, okay, God, it's 9 o'clock. How you doing? It's 12 o'clock. How you doing? And he did it with his windows open too. How many times have we gone into our little, we have no problem praying out loud until somebody says something or we feel like something's, we don't want to offend that person. And then now we'll go into our little prayer closet and we'll just sit here and pray. No, he opened up the windows. I don't know if he prayed loudly, but he obviously prayed loud enough for them to know he was praying, because we know the rest of the story there. He didn't care what would happen, because he knew whatever it was, someone greater, this is getting into where I want to get, someone greater was in control. He didn't care. What's not? Okay, God, if they do something, you know, trusting in you. Another person we can look at is Paul. It's a testimony enough to know that Paul was killing Christians, or right there with the guys killing Christians, and then God just takes over in his life. And I don't know how simple or not simple it was, but it seems like it was pretty just turnkey, and he just, I guess when you get blinded by a light like that and you get spoke to by the voice of God, it will be pretty pretty direct and pretty quick. But I was looking up and trying to think the life of Paul, and I've done some different digging through here to know that Paul was, he was kind of a smart man. But no, did you say no? little bit, yeah, a little bit. Just a little smart man. But he knew God had a plan. I think the minute God spoke to him and God said that you're gonna speak to my people, he knew exactly what that meant. He knew exactly what that entailed, and he never wavered from it. If I was Paul, first off, he had quite a few years of ministry, but most of his ministry seemed like it happened from behind bars or in confinement or being escorted from place to place by centurions on his way to another prison and finally up to Rome. So first off, he planted the seed, if we will, and he started to let it grow. And then he's got these guys like Titus and Timothy going in, okay, come on back, tell me how they're doing. You know, I can see it like a coach. Like if Mike McCarthy on the Packers was sitting in a room closed off from all TVs and audio, and one of his coordinators had to come in every play and say, okay, how'd they do? Well, I'm pretty sure McCarthy would get pretty downhearted pretty quick if every time they came back, they said, they tried hard, but they failed. They sacked us. They intercepted the ball. In essence, that's what Paul was doing. But he was persistent, man. He was, okay, now do this. Now tell them this. And they'd go and tell them, and they come back. And, well, they're doing okay, but this is going on. Okay. And he'd write a letter. And you know, if you read through the letters, it was the same, pretty much the same stuff over and over, it seemed like. And they just kept dealing with it and dealing with it, which is, okay, well, that's because our enemy is pretty persistent. So if he knows what's working, he's going to keep going. I would have given up. If I were Timothy, I would have given up. Paul, you're nuts. They need a kick in the pants. They don't need a letter from you. But he didn't do that. And then the people around him didn't do that either. They kept on going. They were persistent. And they went and they raised up that church, the church that we speak of now. And then he was persistent as well in making sure he knew he had to go to Rome. He knew he had to get to Rome. Well, what's the easiest way to get to the guy in charge? Get in trouble. You know, think about that guy, that post office worker that flew his little airplane over into the capital area. Well, guess who? You got his attention along with the attention of other people. That's what he was going for. That's what Paul was going for. Paul wanted to go and speak to the leaders in Rome, and he was persistent to do that. So now's the good part. Now here's where I could probably talk all afternoon on this just because it hit me so hard, but go ahead and play that first. Isaiah 40 verse 31. But those who trust in the Lord, New Living. Those that trust in the Lord will find new strength, and they will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. Man, that looked pretty graceful. I don't want to say not a care in the world, but just soaring. Did you ever see his wings flap? Did you see him have to work? No. I started looking into what the eagle's all about. It builds the largest nest in North America. It's one of the largest birds in North America. The bald eagle, particularly, is the only bird that's only known to live in North America. All the other eagles live on other countries or on other continents, but the bald eagle is something that's special just to Canada, U.S., and then they go into Mexico a little bit. So we know the bald eagle means a lot for us as a country. You know, I think, Al, what did you say this morning when I put the flag up? You said something about how that flag still has meaning or something like that, even after he gave 4 years of his life to it. You know, the eagle has that same type of thing. You know, and when you look at an eagle, you look at what they do. Eagles are different than other birds. They usually keep the same partner year after year unless one of those partners dies. And then they find a new partner. But they stay together. They usually stay in one or close to the same area. And as they're born, they fly off, do their own thing. And when they're 5 or 6 years old, when they're ready to start mating, they fly back to the exact same area usually that they were born. And they start off their family, if you will, right where they were at. We know what they mean for the country. They're fierce animals. they mean business when they start squawking and come in for a dive bomb into a thing of water. They just look so majestic, you know. And the thing is, I think it's like an 8 to 9 foot wingspan. And I remember coming back up. I think I was coming to the leadership meeting this last time, or coming from somewhere. And I come around the corner, going underneath the Willard Street Bridge, and all of a sudden, this eagle, and it was a bald eagle because I was able to see it, come flying right over the top of the road. Something 9 foot long gets your attention when it comes flying over the road. I thought, holy cow. And it just came down and went right back up. And you just see it circling around. I probably would have caused an accident because I'm sitting there going, where'd it go? Where'd it? But they're so nice to see. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, Dad used to look at the web feed of the Decorah Eagles. That's all their little hatchlings were hatching, and they had live webcams the whole time. They entertain us. Some things with the eagles is that they control their territory. When they're around, you won't find very many predators that live right there. They do have predators, but I was looking, eagles can fight off black bears. They've had video of eagles knocking bears out of the trees that are trying to get to their eggs. I don't want to be that bear. That's a big dinner. That's like, okay, family, let's come over and eat. Most of the other birds that fly around them bow out to the eagle. I'll fly off and go this way. And the eagle takes care of their young. Both mother and father eagles will take care of their young. They both provide food when they're first hatched. They both provide protection as they're learning to get out of the nest. There's no coincidence that God called us to be eagles. It's not just on the eighth day he made eagles, so that's what the humans are like. No, there's a reason. Just like there's a reason he's considered the lion and the lamb, just for the same reason he calls Satan a serpent. We depict him as a snake. So most of us here, an eagle? We want that type of an eagle. We want the eagle that's just soaring. I want to be that eagle. I want to be flying all over, not a care in the world. I don't want to have to worry about anything. Eagles are persistent. They never give up. And I found out just how true that is. Go ahead and play that other video, Chris. This is the type of eagle I want to be. I thought it was a bag of something, like a... But just watch this. And it's not uncommon. I found many videos of eagles swimming. That's what I said. As I'm sitting there, just like, holy cow. Now you can start to see how far from the shore he actually was. Just amazing. You talk about persistence, yeah. And that's what hit me. When I saw this video, I thought, how persistent of a bird. I mean, how easy would it be for him to just let go and fly away? I mean, there's other fish in the sea. But and if you time it out, it's almost 4 minutes that he sits there and swims.
Where's my lazy boy?
Now just wait till you see what he's got. It's a fish. It's a giant fish up in Alaska. I mean, even out of the water, you can't pick it up. There's a couple things that I took out of this video. Yeah, let's go. So there he goes. Oh, he finally got up there and finished and started eating it. He takes it up another couple feet and then starts eating it. That's, I don't know if people really want to watch that. There's a lot. If you want to watch that, go YouTube. Eagle eating food. they're not using knives and forks, that's for sure. But when I watched that, I thought, now that is the eagle I want to be like. You know, so a couple things. First off, he came from that high up, just as high as what we saw in the first video, and he's able to see that little fish. Well, I think the water takes away 10 pounds. I don't know. But he sees that fish down there, and it's one thing to be able to come down and take it, but to think about the time difference, an eagle flying down, when they swoop down into the water, can be going 30 to 40 miles an hour to grab a fish. And they don't go under the water, so they got to reach down and grab the fish. So they got to know that it's at a certain depth. Just crazy. So not only did he see that prize down there, and man, he went after it. He went after it. But then what happened when it got to be a little bit more than he thought he could handle? He said, oh, no, you don't. I had to tell Chris to mute it because these guys weren't in church when they recorded that video. So they were fishermen. And now they got a fish story. But, you know, no, you don't. I believe God gave me you as my dinner, and I will eat you. So, and he swam. How... Persistence. That's the word that hit me as soon as I saw persistence. The persistence of that bird. Now I know why God calls us eagles. You know, there's going to be times that we're flying at 30,000 feet, so to speak, and things are going to be looking okay. But God doesn't just tell us, okay, go fly up there. He's got angels for that. He's got angels to fill that airspace. He's got us to come down and say, there's something going on right there. I need you to swoop down and take it. I need you to swoop down and intervene. Most of us will swoop down, and if it doesn't feel right, if it doesn't feel good, if we're a little timid, what do? We come down and, oh, no, sorry. Somebody else will come and get that one. Let a bear get you, fish. And we take off and come back up, and then we wonder, man, God, how come you're not using me? How come I don't feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Well, because you're not. What if we dealt with our problems like that eagle dealt with that fish? And the other thing that struck me as I'm watching that is not only did he get it to shore, he could have sat right there next to the water and started eating that fish. But what do fish do? They jump back in the water. No, let's go up here on the rocks. If you want to try to get away from me, you're going to have to fight. You're going to have to fight and get away from me. So he takes it up another, 10, 15 feet up on the shore and then starts in on it. Our Father in heaven sees us as eagles. He sees us when we're soaring, but he sees us when we can be like that, when we can be as persistent as an eagle coming down and saying, nope, God gave me that and I'm going to take it, you know? We do it for some things. We do it for, God gave me healing over that cold, and I'm going to take it. But some of us can't say God gave me permission and authority over this situation at work, and I'm going to take that authority. You know, we got testimonies in this room for healing of people that, and I'm looking at Don and Al, of people that took what God said. You have authority over that sickness, and you take it. You take your authority over that sickness. Sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes little things come back, and that enemy is persistent too, and he says, well, maybe you're not really healed. Are you sure? How can he be so sure? The doctor uses the word remission, but I use the word healed. Persistent like an eagle. We're still human, so our instinctive nature, when something is too hard to handle for ourselves, is to let go and take off. If that eagle would have let go and take off, that fish would have gotten away. It would have been fed or food for some other animal, and that eagle would have missed out. Could he have still gotten food? Yeah. Would he have still gotten food? Yeah. But he wouldn't have gotten what was in his marks. What was on his, the authority he had as an eagle was to eat that fish. We need to change our instinctiveness, our instinctive thought process, our nature. We need to twist it to what God sees it as. When we have problems, you know, for Father's Day, we look at the Father, we look at what they teach us, you know, Dad taught me to do this, Dad taught me not to do this. Our Heavenly Father, though, that's the ultimate. When I think of Father's Day, it's a Hallmark holiday, but when I think of Father's Day to what it means to God, what if we just spend every day, every Sunday at least, we should be doing every day, but what if we spend every day, every Sunday just going, Father, thank you. Thank you, Father, for what you're doing. If we want to look in the Bible and see a guy with persistence like that eagle, it's in the Old Testament, the book of Job. As far as I'm concerned, he's the most human being I've ever seen in the Bible and being just like me. Because there's things that I feel God has given me, just like Job was given. What was he given? He was given wealth. He was given a family. He was given position, even before everything happened. And God just said, I know that is my child. That is my Job. Enemy, you want to see if you can do anything? That's fine, but I'm just going to use it to prove who I am and who he says and knows that I am. And even in his struggles, he came and what did he do? God, how could he praise God? Did he question God's ability? No. Did he question whether God was there? Maybe a little bit. But he always, every time he questioned God, he always listened for an answer and believed that answer was from God. You know, if you were to say, God, where are you at in this situation? What if he actually answered back and said, where were you when the earth was formed? Where were you? Thankfully, in your hands, Lord. We got to be everything. Everybody was telling him, Job, give up. This guy don't love you. Your God has failed you. Look at you're miserable. Your family's dead. Your animals are dead. Your farm is dead. Your health is dead. You're dead. The only reason you got breath in your lungs is because God hates you so much. So not my God. Whatever God has me in here doing, it's got to be for something else. Think about your week ahead. We got a lot of things going on. We got families. We got jobs. Think about your week ahead and think about some of the problems that could come up. Think about some of the struggles that could come up. I don't know. Some people here may be going to a doctor's appointment. Some people here may be going to talk about something with money, a retirement thing or a insurance thing or whatever. Some people are just looking at going, I just hope my vehicle makes it. I just hope this makes it for the week. What are you going to do when that thing happens that comes against you that's not what you hope for? How are you going to respond? You're going to pray like Daniel. You're going to press on knowing God has something. Hopefully this is what you're going to do. This is what I hope to do. You're going to press on knowing God has something in store for you. I don't know. You know what? Do I think God has every single piece of my week laid out in perfect order? Sure do. Do I believe I'm going to make every single one of those perfect steps in perfect order? Sure don't, because I'm human. But what do I strive for every week? Dad just said it. When I wake up in the morning, God, this is your day. I know I failed you before, but this is your day. Let's go at it one more time. And eventually we can be persistent enough that we actually accomplish everything he has put out for us. The enemy is going to keep coming against us, but we got to be smarter. How are you going to respond? Let's respond how our Heavenly Father taught us to respond. He called us as eagles to be persistent in what we do. If we are persistent in our lives, you know what other people around you are going to become? Persistent. They're going to see how you react. They're going to see how you respond. If you're not persistent, if you are being beaten down by the enemy, if you're taking every blow like it's your last, people around you, they're going to feel that too. We are who we hang out with, right? So, I don't know where you're at. You might be an eagle soaring high right now. I know I'm kind of in the middle. There's things that I'm having to go and dive after and take control of, take dominion over, my authority over. And there's some things that I know God's already taken care of it, so I feel like I'm soaring. So I'm somewhere in the middle there, and I'm going to go up and down and up and down. That's probably where you guys are at too. But this week, think about the word persistence and what you need to be persistent for. You know, Jesse's going to start doing summer school teaching. He's going to have to be persistent, or those kids are going to eat him alive. No. But he does have to hold a persistent attitude, not only in knowing that this is going to be a fun summer, this is going to be fun. I'm going to do what I went to school for, what I love. But when those challenges come and the kids are going to look at him and try to, well, first graders I don't think have this mentality yet, where they, I'm going to break that teacher. This fall when he goes to seventh grade, that's when they're going to have that attitude of, look at this guy. What do they call him in the crab boating industry? Greenhorns. Look at this guy. Let's break him. He's going to have to be persistent in what he knows, what he feels, what he believes, and who he's serving. That's how all of us should be. So, what are you persistent for? What are you going to be persistent for? Remember, it's a quality that allows someone to continue doing something or trying to do something. This, I think, is the one that's important for all of us, even though it's difficult or opposed by other people. It ain't popular in the worldly culture. Who cares? It ain't what everybody's doing. It ain't what even your best friends may be doing. It may not be what your other family members are doing. But if God has called us to do it, we got to do it. Amen?